That's Ben Webster, the king of the tenor sax, with Blue Light. This piece was recorded in Copenhagen in September of 1965, a year after Webster moved there to live permanently. 8 years later, he died of a cerebral hemorrhage after performing in Amsterdam. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And midnight last night was the final deadline for the Clinton Foundation to file financial reports with the IRS on its operations for the previous year. Well, the reports were filed, but there's a lot that's wrong and a lot that's missing, says our guest, Charles Ortel. You know him. He's only been reporting on the Clinton Foundation here since May, following the money and finding where it's missing. The foundation met the deadline, as I said, but its financial filings, like those since 1998, for the foundation's first year of operations, were, quote, false and misleading, he says. Ortel, as you know, is a former Wall Street banker who blew the whistle on stock fraud prior to the 2007-2008 market crash, and is the recognized leading expert on the foundation's financial dealings. He has been looking into the foundation and its operations for the past 2 years, and he has uncovered enough evidence, he says, to have him feel confident in labeling the foundation and its operations the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in history. So we continue to follow the money trail, and we are going to talk about these financial statements, which Charles has had some time to examine, even though they were just filed yesterday or last night. But he says the numbers appear not to be adding up. Thanks, Charles, for being with us today.
My great pleasure, Eutrice.
Well, you've had some time to take a look at these filings. Could you tell us what you found to be the top clues that something was wrong here with these filings?
Sure. The simplest thing to think about is that while the Clinton Foundation, its various entities, are not required to tell the public how much money they receive from individual donors, large donors, each of these large U.S. donors is required under various laws to provide a detailed accounting of the grants that they've made of $5,000 or more. So unfortunately for the Clinton Foundation, the largest foundation in the world, I believe, the Gates Foundation, is a very substantial donor to the Clinton Foundation. And the Gates Foundation has meticulous records. I think its latest private foundation form, which was put up yesterday, from memory, is 1,192 pages long. So I have certainly not read all 1,192 pages of the Gates Foundation form, but I immediately tracked into their disclosures for how much money they sent towards Clinton entities. And the aggregate numbers do not foot, and they should foot to the penny, for grants paid during the year and grants recognized in the Clinton Foundation books. Now, for the Clinton Foundation, there are two major pieces, one of which is the Health Access Initiative, and that entity files a separate report to the IRS. So I was able to look at both, and there are just myriad problems with the ways in which the Clinton Foundation continues to account for those two entities. It is almost as if they are purposely trying to hide the truth as opposed to purposely complying with the law. They, for example, in the Health Access Initiative, that one, the IRS form, does not attach an audit to it, at least the version that I saw. And actually, in the body of the tax form, it says they didn't even prepare an audit. Now, we'll take a closer look at that later on when I get to see what they filed with New York State. As of this morning, they still hadn't filed with New York State, but there's a lag in the New York State filings. So it may take, you know, a week or two to see whatever it is and compare what they filed with New York State. So the second issue, Utrecht, we talked about this in the past. The Clinton Foundation is like a hydra. It's got many, many different so-called initiatives and constituent elements inside and outside the United States. They're required, though, to prepare a simple, relatively simple report that looks, it forces the management, the trustees, to answer questions about the whole, what is called consolidated enterprise. That means all of the different initiatives under which the Clinton Foundation, over which the Clinton Foundation trustees exercise control. That group result is supposed to be totted up and put in the IRS tax form. And then an accounting firm is supposed to go out that is competent, is supposed to go out and check all these numbers. Now, one piece of theoretical good news is that the accounting firm PricewaterhouseCoopers that has been involved with the Clinton Foundation since 2013, I believe, it says in the filing that we saw late last night that Coopers received, I think, $1.6 million for their work during 2015, meaning that they must have done some work, one would hope. Yet the audit that is attached for the consolidated enterprise is radically different than the numbers that are laid out for the Clinton Foundation in the tax filing. So it's as if, you know, the trustees decide, you know, we're not even really going to try to comply with the law. We're going to put out, you know, our tax forms on one basis that seems to exclude this Health Access Initiative from it. And then we're going to do the tax forms on a different basis. Now, why does that matter? The tax forms require you to list out who your big donors are. And they require, actually, the IRS gets the actual identity, but the public just gets the amount. And it also requires you to list out, or to total, at the federal level, the total amount of money that came in from governments. And the area of, is the Clinton Foundation taking money from foreign governments, is a very sticky wicket. So for the foundation taken as a whole, there's a small number shown, around 8 million or so, 8 or 9 million, as coming in from governments with no specific details revealed yet. Those should come out on the New York State tax forms. Which were due also the same day, November 15th. For this CHI, this Clinton Health Access Initiative, the number is more like 91 million from governments. So it's there we would expect to see perhaps names like Qatar or Saudi Arabia or some of these governments that are raise hackles, as they should, amongst the minds of the American public. So just starting there, and I could go on, and I don't want to bore your reader or your listeners unduly with details, but there are just flaw after flaw after flaw in the set of filings, and it's as if at this stage the trustees have decided that they don't care. I mean, they're just going to throw, you know, their hands up, file something, and see what happens.
But the foundation, although it met a deadline, it turned something in to the IRS, so in their view, they met the requirements. But this was, in fact, their final warning, their final deadline. They missed previous deadlines and missed about 18 years worth of filings. How did this go without any sanction at all from the IRS?
Well, I think the issue you trace is that the tax-exempt department of the IRS, which is the department that sits on top of all foundations, all charities, does not have the resources, I don't think, to really monitor the more than 1 million tax-exempt entities that file reports each year. And if they did have those resources, it would seem they made a decision to just look the other way with this one, because the problems here are so flagrant. It's not, you know, a one-time technical mistake. You can't prepare an audit, an independent financial audit, starting, let's say, December 31st, 2014, for the period ending December 31st, 2015, on the back of 17 years of mistaken audits. You just can't do that. You have to do it properly, you have to correct the previous years. And they obviously decided they weren't going to do that. I think the big problem for them was the initial period, October 23, 1997 to December 31, 2004, when they were building the campus in Little Rock using accounting techniques that they explicitly state in hidden accounting work product that they don't put on their website but have filed in Massachusetts, that these techniques are not allowed in the United States of America. So I mean, you start there, that in accounting for the period where they were building, the only piece of this that was ever validly authorized by the IRS, that is to say the Presidential Center, if you're going to use accounting techniques for that are just, you know, non-compliant, then obviously when you pick things up at year-end December 31, 2004, nothing after that will technically comply because the base is all wrong. And, you know, when you read, when people who understand or are trained in accounting read the documents that are out there, they are textbook examples of fraudulent statements. There are obvious mathematical errors. There are obvious factual errors. These reports are not prepared as required on a consistent basis from year to year. And, you know, the people around the table who are involved with the Clinton Foundation, some of them as trustees, are financially sophisticated people. The people in the IRS, I mean, we read that recently the IRS has been in the news as people have been forced to admit that indeed they did target Tea Party and conservative groups. And when you read the horror stories of the way the IRS goes after somebody if they want to persecute them, this performance is so bad, so substandard, that the only explanation I can come up with is that politically connected people, perhaps Valerie Jarrett as high as that or higher, decided that a strategy was going to be put in place in the Obama administration to let friends of the Obama administration escape. You know, let them do whatever they want and put in whatever paperwork they want and exercise prosecutorial discretion, neither to audit nor to prosecute. And so the Clinton group goes in under that door. You know, they can do whatever they want, and the law be damned. On the other hand, they seem maybe also to have looked at Tea Party and conservative groups and said, you know, we're going to chill the money flow through those groups. And, you know, that's just behavior that is, it's criminal behavior, frankly. And if there are, if it can be proven that there are, you know, there's a network of people in the IRS, in Justice, that were involved in this sort of behavior, targeting political enemies using the tax code. And perhaps this goes further even to, you know, personal income tax persecution, then we have serious problems on our hands. And I think there's a general feeling across this country, people on the left, people on the right, dissatisfied with the ways in which justice is administered. We've gone a long way from a period where, you know, we may disagree in elections, but we had high confidence that, you know, the justice system and the tax system would be administered fairly. So, you know, here's an area I know that Mr. Trump and his team want to reform the tax code and simplify that. I'm all in favor of that. But I think what we need here, and that this Clinton Foundation is one example, there are other elements, the Gates Foundation, the Bloomberg Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, there are other large foundations whose sloppiness, we'll put it charitably, whose sloppiness as it applies to supporting the Clinton Foundation needs to be the subject of a deep and searching public inquiry, a bipartisan inquiry that looks and ask the question, do we have a system in place that does, and that can and does regulate charities that are complex, like the ones I just named, the Clinton Foundation and others, particularly if they operate internationally and in multiple states? Do we have the requisite regulatory system? And it, and I think the Clinton case proves that we don't. And now we have an opportune time because, you know, our current president, Barack Obama, has made plain and announced that a centerpiece of his post-presidency is going to be operating the Barack Obama Foundation. So, you know, we can't have another rogue presidential charity embarrass the people of the United States around the world and also be engaged in criminal activity. This is a good time to focus hard on what went wrong here, then expose the extent and implications of the wrongdoing, and then decide how it should be punished.
Well, these reports that are to be filed with the IRS, which, again, the Clinton Foundation has not done since 1998, they require an audit to accompany these reports. That is an independent firm that goes over the books and certifies that everything is copacetic. Everything that the foundation represents as revenues and expenses and so forth, and its operations, all are within the law. Now, these firms themselves are obligated by law, are they not, to report any kind of irregularity that they find. Isn't it odd that in all of this time, not one of these firms charged with producing an authentic audit has reported even to the foundation itself and its members of the board, the board of directors, if they didn't go to the IRS? But we don't see in the documents released so far by WikiLeaks any conversation going on involving the members of the board and any auditing firm about the numbers not adding up.
Well, it's worse than that, Yatrice, actually. It's a lot worse than that. Actually, in 2008, we have a memo dated November 10th, 2008, from a lawyer, Kamiki Gibson, who was hired in September of 2008 to give a report to the CEO, Bruce Lindsay, of the foundation, who was a trustee in that year, that critical year when Hillary was running, and when she later sought and obtained the position of Secretary of State. We have a report flatly stating that the control system of the foundation did not work, and that there had been massive and were massive continuing problems so serious that they placed the legal status of the foundation in grave jeopardy. We have a report, an internal memorandum from May 11, 2015, wherein the interim CEO then complains of two diversions that occurred in that same year in 2008. We have a draft report, and I don't think we have the earliest draft report. We have a draft report from the world-renowned firm, Simpson Thacher, a place where I, as a young teenager, was a proofreader for part of the summer. We have a report from people who really know how the law is supposed to work and what control systems should be in place, complaining of myriad problems. And yet, the Clinton Foundation trustees, in what I would argue is a continuing, reckless pattern of gross negligence, failed to replace the auditors, the longstanding, in quotes, auditor, a regional firm called D as in boy, K as in king, D as in dog, BKD. That's a firm that was associated, I think, as Bill O'Reilly likes to say, from the jump, from the very beginning, with the process of trying to get financial accounts done properly. So, you know, that thing was doing the bidding, I would guess, of the core inside corrupt group at the Clinton Foundation through December 31st, 2012. It makes no sense to keep that group, that accounting firm, involved generally speaking, good practice is not to have the same accounting firm work for that long. Because the accounting firm, just to make plain, what we're talking about here is not, you know, an audit that you get when you screw up on your taxes. What we're talking about is a check. And there are various levels of audit, but here you need a full scope audit. You need somebody to go and check and make sure, first of all, that any key authorities, legal authorities, licenses, whatever, that were required for the Clinton Foundation were in fact in place. Because if they're not, then arguably this was not actually a tax-exempt entity. And if it's not a tax-exempt entity organized and operated lawfully, then it would be required to pay corporate income taxes eventually. You'd have to strike the accounts very differently than they have been presented. So it's clear, crystal clear, that the auditing firm BKD in the early period was a disaster. It was just doing the bidding of the insiders who told them that, you know, why don't you just use whatever accounting principles we decide this minute we might want to use here, as opposed to why don't you comply with the law? So I would argue there's no good reason to have continued to use BKD for any year past the first year in which they were involved, 1998, and certainly not all the way from 98 to 2012. So yeah, there were lots of warning signs. And all during this period that I referred to, the beginning through 2012, there was a core group of inside trustees who were certainly not independent. They were either, in the case of Terry McAuliffe, somebody who had lent the Clintons money or at least made it possible for them to purchase their house up in Chappaqua without disclosing that in the books, or people who had worked on the Clinton political team, people like Cheryl Mills and Maggie Williams, or indeed Bill and Hillary's daughter, Chelsea. There's no independent board here. There was no independent accounting firm. There were no controls. And that's why nobody really knows what actually happened yet with any money that may have been sent towards this foundation.
Well, you anticipate my next question. In this time when the records, as you would call them, were false and materially misleading, and the reports, of course, are filled with accounting errors and other mathematical errors. One, is it your belief, do you believe that this was not just accidental, but this was a formalized way to basically evade detection by the IRS and to avoid any further, deeper investigation by the IRS? And number two, what kind of money from other documents that you have been looking at, what kind of money flowed into the foundation and its affiliates during that time?
Okay. Well, I would, in the first part of your question, I would say that old habits die hard. And, you know, when you look through the long history of Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton's political tenure in Arkansas, and then the White House, and then afterwards, you know, forgetting the sexual scandals, and, you know, let's leave those on the side for a second, which that's an area I don't really spend much time concentrating on. But let's focus on the money scandals. The president was impeached, which means it's akin to being indicted. He was impeached by the House of Representatives in the end for two counts. One, lying under oath, and two, obstructing justice. That seems to be the way in which he and Hillary, and maybe perhaps now Chelsea, live their lives. They are prepared to lie under oath. And there you see in the foundation the pattern of, you know, multiple years, every year, lying under oath concerning the financials and concerning key entries in the 990s, and then manipulating the system so that your acolytes, Lois Lerner might be one, and others perhaps in the, you know, in the Justice Department, decide that they will not prosecute you. That seems to be the way in which they live their lives. And, you know, it'd be one thing if this were Al Capone. I mean, you know, you say, all right, Al Capone, he's a gangster. You know, let's you throw the book at him when we catch him. But these are people who were pretending they were on the good side. I mean, these are people who, in one case, held the highest political office in the land, in another case, nearly just won the highest political office in the land. Along the way, served in theory, quote, served we the people. And now you look at this mess, you know, what kind of a signal does it send across the country and around the world to see this kind of a mess? It's almost, you know, when you and I began on this discussion back in May, it wasn't accepted wisdom that the Clinton Foundation was a fraud. And I think now it's come to the point. Today, Rudy Giuliani was attacked in the press, perhaps rightly, for operating his own personal stuff almost in the same way that the Clinton Foundation has been operating. It's become sort of a laugh line, this foundation, because people understand the truth. Well, you can't, I don't think, expose this, grasp it, and then say, well, why don't we just give her a pardon? Because you know, give these people a pardon because, you know, they gave their lives to politics. Rubbish. You can't do that. You have to make an example of them. And the answer to your question, and by them I mean the Clintons, all the trustees, the past trustees, the executives, and what you would do, or what I'm doing now and have been doing, is send the word out. You know, this is going to get exposed, and the people who resist the hardest are going to be punished the hardest. And then people who come forward first to help from the inside sort out what really happened are the ones who will receive more lenient treatment. That's the way I predict it's going to work here. Now, as to how much money may have gone towards the Clinton Foundation and its various projects, you know, at the moment, we just be guessing. And I've used a figure in the past of $100 billion, and that I get to that figure by considering the many affiliated charities that should have been mentioned in these filings and that should have been highlighted so that the investigators can go and look for suspect private gain transactions and pay-to-play, if there were pay-to-play transactions involving related parties. The Clintons resolutely resist exposing connections that can be found by looking through the public record. Looking at, you know, key contractors to the Clinton Foundation or key affiliates of the Clinton Foundation through McKinsey, the business arrangements with big donors like Dennis O'Brien with Digicel and Frank Juicer with his various things, and the Din family of, I guess, now London, but formerly of Sweden. There's a whole long list of people who have created, and Doug Band admits it, and it's one of those WikiLeaks memos. They've used the Rolodex of the Clinton family as a way to create business dealings all over the world through Clinton Global Initiative, through Teneo, et cetera. So no one has yet systematically gone through and made a list, as I think needs to be done, of any transaction that had its genesis in a Clinton Global Initiative meeting. Or for that matter, a Clinton Climate Initiative meeting, and there are now a whole bunch of these other initiatives that they discuss. When you start going through all that and you start thinking through the deals that were financed as a result of the Clinton Global Initiative and the stimulus program, opportunities that may have been fomented through, you know, links involving Clinton Foundation and government, and other government officials, I mean, you very quickly get up into high numbers, into a trillion or more of potential deals. And, you know, you're not allowed to do it. What I think happened here is that when Bill, when Hillary was elected to the Senate, and so she could no longer make serious money, and when Bill lost his law license, had to surrender his law license, so he could not be, you know, make money as a rainmaker for an established firm, he had to get into the business of doing deals. So they, you know, I think the record and history will show that what these people have been doing is operating a gigantic business development exercise in the guise of a theoretical do-good charity, assuming that nobody would ever call them up.
But that's an impressive figure, and all the more so because instinct – now, we're talking about professionals here, people who are charged, in the IRS anyway, to have the numbers tell a story, and any person who is charged with going over books and so forth, there comes a point when they can easily spot something is wrong here. Not to mention the companies that prepared these so-called audits, that they didn't have somebody saying, hey, wait a minute, this is really bad, or even going to the authorities and saying, you know, just so that they protect themselves, saying we have picked up something here that is quite disturbing and ought to be looked at a little bit more closely. We haven't gotten the explanations for some of these numbers, but we know that they're out of whack, and we're not satisfied with the explanations. We have gotten no explanations, as a matter of fact, for these kinds of numbers, but we do know something is wrong. And it therefore goes nowhere. Nobody raises a signal, except internally with some of these memos to the board of directors and to the CEO of the main foundation. But it seems to me that there should have been some other kind of investigation triggered, because if you're talking about $1 trillion in terms of not only money coming into the foundation, but also the profits and the benefits derived in other ways from business dealings that were arranged through the foundation and so forth. When you add up all of that, you're now talking these astronomical numbers. This kind of crime, even with Bernie Madoff, it makes Bernie Madoff look like an altar boy, like a novice. This is huge, major league crime. And it is astounding that we have no reference at all of this crime or these crimes coming to the attention of the authorities.
It is indeed. I mean, it's scant comfort. I mean, especially when you think through, I mean, as I mentioned in the past, I've been on the board of two small charities. I'm currently on the board of one. And the people I have been associated with in each of these charities take this stuff really seriously, as do most people who read the law and, you know, who care about right and wrong. You know, the last thing you're going to do is think about getting involved in a charity that's breaking not simply the local state law in whatever state it's for, but across every U.S. state, the District of Columbia, and in more than 100 countries around the world, you know, to take the risk that you would run afoul of these laws. I mean, a charity is not like opening, you know, a small business. A charity, you're not allowed to operate a charity for the private gain of those associated with it. It's supposed to serve exclusively public purposes. And across this great country, in many countries, those who get involved in charities, they give it their time. They generally work for free. They're not saying, listen, you know, if you want me to help you, you've got to send a private jet with a certain, you know, of a certain size, and I've got to stay in a presidential suite, and I got to have bodyguards. No. I mean, the average person who gets involved with a charity tries to, may work for free, may, you know, give supplies and other aid for free. And if he or she does get paid, generally it's far less than the market rate that you could get, you know, trying to hire yourself out for the highest bidder. So to think that you would go down this path attracts a special breed of scoundrel. And then, you know, when you think about the big donors who've been giving money to this, I mean, initially when I figured out that the Gates Foundation was, I think they're the second biggest cumulative donor to the Clinton Group of charities. Now, Bill Gates, I ran into him once in the green room at CNN. I've never had a real discussion with him about anything, but you read his books, you see him talking around the world. He's not stupid. Now, some would argue that he is a monopolist. And that's the way he thinks about living his life. And he certainly has made a tremendous amount of money with Microsoft and other investments. But, you know, when I initially saw that Bill Gates and his foundation were involved with this Clinton Foundation, I assumed that they must have done due diligence and they must see things that I don't see. Now, what I think is the opposite. I'm strongly questioning why it is that the Gates Foundation, and the one thing that comes out of the latest set of filings is that they seem to have sent about $55 million to the group of Clinton charities in 2015 alone, and committed another $40+ million to projects for years starting in 2016 and forward. I mean, that's a lot of money to give to any one charity, and it certainly it's a big percentage of the Clinton Foundation reported results. It is inexplicable to me that this smart group of people that works for Bill Gates and his wife Melinda, and for the third trustee Warren Buffett, who are supposedly, you know, among the richest, most powerful people anywhere, and they have huge staff and they have the ability to pay for smart accountants and lawyers. I don't understand how they would have approved in 2015 28 additional grants to Clinton Foundation entities when you can see without any inside work at all that these things are, you know, abhorrent frauds. I don't get it. So, I think this is a very surprising set of affairs. It's surprising that so few regulators and all the many governments that are watching things like this would stand up and say, you know, enough is enough, boys. This does not add up. We don't care who you are. We don't care that you're, you know, very powerful people, both politically and in the business world. You have to play by the same rules as everybody else, particularly when it comes to charity.
Well, I want to talk about the fact that the people like Gates, major donors, are they aware that they are legally exposed? Because when you're giving this kind of money, and all, let's say, Bill Gates gave technically 90-something million, you just talked about that, and with a promise of giving more, we don't know what the impetus was, whether this also was pay-to-play, for example, opening up markets, say, in China or someplace else for his products. We don't know. But in any event, he has made a substantial commitment, and he has donated heavily to the Clinton Foundation. Now, isn't he legally bound as a donor at even at that level, to do due diligence on the foundation and to find out whether it's legit, whether it is abiding by the law, whether there were any complaints about it, or any investigations or anything like that before getting involved with the Clinton Foundation? And if he didn't do that, is he also complicit in the wrongdoing of the Clinton Foundation?
Great points, Eutrice, and I'll give you the answers, or try to anyway. So the Gates Foundation is what's called a private foundation. In other words, up until yesterday when they changed their policy, or they say they're going to change their policy, they did not solicit outside money. They didn't have to. They had a ton of money from the Gates family, and then Warren Buffett came along and said, you know, I love what you guys are doing, so I'm going to give you a whole bunch of money too. So the rules on private foundations were extensively tightened the last time in 1969. Now, I'm not somebody who loves a gigantic regulatory state, but things have changed a little bit since 1969. And I think, you know, perhaps this case is a clarion call for why we need to go back to ground zero here and decide what should we do to recognize reality and how might we tighten the rules that were put in place back then. What happened back then is, and that was an era when tax rates were much higher. The authorities became concerned back then, if you look into the history, that rich people would create these pools of money and get 10 tax deductions against their income for putting money into a pot. and that that pot of money would grow tax-free and be dispensed instead of the charitable works to, you know, to suspect activities. The special tough rules were put in place way back then that require the trustees of these foundations to ensure, and they're on the hook, the trustees themselves and the management teams are on the hook, actually, to make sure that when a Gates Foundation says we've given $90 million to the Clinton Foundation because it's a charity and the charity is authorized, organized, and operated lawfully, the trustees of the donor, as to say the Gates Foundation, are on the hook if that's not the case. And in other instances, there have been disciplinary actions where the trustees are, where the donating entity is fined, and where the management team can be fined, and where the pattern is flagrant, the donating charity can either pay a massive fine, and I mean massive, or it could be actually shut down by the IRS. And so there's several concerns that I would have, and you know, it's quite likely that Bill Gates and Melinda Gates and Warren Buffett are not going to listen to me, but they should in this case, because you know the way they've set this up, there's a twin structure. The entity that owns the assets of the Gates Foundation is in what's called a trust, and that thing only has two trustees, according to the paperwork that I just reviewed again this morning before this interview, and those are Bill and Melinda Gates. And then the entity that's supposed to take the assets from the trust and use them for the only for the authorized purposes of the Gates Foundation, there are three trustees, and that's Bill, Melinda, and Warren Buffett. Each of those people are the principal donors to the trust. And so none of these people are independent, the way I look at it. There is no independent trustee here. So when you're thinking through a conflict, when you're thinking through you know, a conflict of interest that should be resolved, they have don't have a structure here that allows them to do it at present because they've concentrated power in the donor class. And I think that was a very dangerous, that will prove to have been a very dangerous thing to do here. You contrast this with the Bloomberg Foundation, and there, you know, Mike Bloomberg here in New York City, he publicly has been enormously generous, not just in the city, but around the world. And on most aspects of his charitable giving, I would say he's an A-plus fellow, a model for the rest of the world to follow. But unfortunately, in his connections via something called C40 Large Cities Foundation, which is, I think, a complete fraud, that thing is in part funded by Mike Bloomberg and by other entities, and it has given money to the Clinton Foundation, and it operates, it allows the Clinton, a portion of the Clinton Foundation to be a, quote, implementing partner for it. The Bloomberg Foundation, which is not as big as the Gates Foundation, but it's big, has a massive independent board. And now while, you know, if the donor's going to be on the board and she surrounds him or herself with a whole bunch of independent trustees, chances are the independent trustees will listen to the donor if the donor expresses a strong view. But if you have a whole bunch of truly independent trustees, then you really have created a foundation. I would argue that one flaw in the way in which a lot of these foundations are set up is that, you know, there really isn't a constructive gift made to the foundation. That is to say, you know, when Bill Gates gives a lot of money to his own foundation and his family still runs the core of its operation, I would argue you could make the case that there wasn't really a gift. And since there wasn't a gift, why should Bill Gates get a tax deduction? And why, going forward, should the income earned on this supposed foundation accrue free of tax? You know, and Bill Gates and Melinda Gates and Warren Buffett, we have three people who are fond of lecturing all of us on, you know, how unequal things are inside the United States and how we need a more aggressive government approach towards taxation. So, you know, I actually think that this whole, the role that the Gates Foundation has played here, providing cover to the Clintons, being so active with the Clintons around the world and failing to criticize the Clintons, is the kind of behavior that the tax code is meant to punish. Because when the tax code, if you read through it carefully, when they try to figure out who's an insider in a foundation, there's a sweeping definition, which says any person, meaning an individual or a corporate entity, that is in a position to exercise significant influence over a foundation or a charity. And I would definitely say the Gates Foundation was in position to exercise significant influence over the Clinton Foundation, given the size of its contributions, given its reputation, and given the fact that not only was the Gates Foundation a direct investor itself into the Clinton Foundation, but it's also an indirect investor, at least through one entity I know of, Unitaid, which is the largest donor to the Clinton Foundation at over $650 million cumulatively. So in round numbers, I think, you know, the latest filing, let's just say it's all in, we have about $2.3 billion that's come towards the Clinton Foundation cumulatively since 1998. That amount, Unitaid is responsible for about $650 million. The Gates Foundation is responsible for round numbers, let's say $350 or so. So you've got about $1 billion out of $2.3 billion, or almost 50% of the money that has been sent towards the Clinton Foundation comes from these two pockets, both of which are connected to Gates, both of which, you know, should have done their homework a lot better. And in the case, and Gates Foundation has been with this thing 2005 to 2015, and now 16, and Unitaid 2006 to 2015. So it's not like it's, you know, a few small errors here. This is a continuing, in the case of the Gates Foundation, escalating pattern of abuse. And in the case of Unitaid, it's a continuing and diminishing pattern of abuse.
And we have a problem. The basic problem is that they were giving money to a foundation that had been operating all these different initiatives illegally. These were not authorized to function in any way that the Clinton Foundation had been functioning. The Clinton Foundation initially was what? To establish this nonprofit organization to build a presidential library and research facility in Little Rock, Arkansas, period, end. That's all it was supposed to do. And then it went on its own illegally and fashioned all these different avenues through which it would just go and hunt down and chase down more money, so that technically even the well-meaning Bill Gates got hoodwinked into thinking that he was donating to a well-established legal charity. And this is the root of the problem. A lot of these Clinton offshoots that they kept touting about doing all this good all over the world, these are sham operations. They are illegal, and they're not supposed to be soliciting money. But I want to talk about this. The forms that were filed by midnight last night speak to a federal accounting. What's happening at the state level?
Well, at the state level, there are also many forms have to be filed. And what I found with New York State, that I think has one of the better regulatory regimes, though it doesn't seem in the Clinton Foundation case to be followed according to the letter of the law, what I found is that those forms, you know, go into the system, and it just takes the clerks and whoever enters the forms into the computer system a little bit of time to get them up and running. So in past years, when I've been looking at this, generally it can take, you know, as much as 2 or 3 weeks. We've got Thanksgiving coming up, so maybe we'll get lucky and we'll see the forms quickly. In New York, there's a special reason to want the forms, and that is that there is a good requirement in New York that requires a charity like any part of the Clinton Foundation that files a separate annual report has to list out in specific terms each grant from any government entity, including the name of the government, the department of the government, the amount of the grant, the purpose of the grant. All that has to be listed out. And that information is very, very helpful, in particular for trying to police exactly why foreign governments might be donating to an entity like this, the Clinton one, where there are political connections, where it is possible that a foreign government may be trying to curry favor with a political figure by making a donation to a person's charity. So I've got my eyes peeled on the New York filings. I expect those to come in, and I expect to make quite an issue over why these forms have never been filled out properly for the Clinton entities in any year inside New York State. Why has New York State given a pass to the Clinton charity?
Wow. What do you expect the answer would be?
I think the current governor of New York State is Andrew Cuomo, who served in the Bill Clinton cabinet. I think he was the attorney general before he was the governor. And before that, we have Elliot Spitzer, who was a prominent Democrat. So, you know, in New York State, we have a Democrat-controlled state. We have a former, in Hillary, we had a senator representing the state from 2001 forward. So, you know, it's not surprising that the Clintons would have right away been able to work their magic, shall we say, their dark magic, ensuring that the regulatory apparatus of the state of New York was corrupted. And, you know, we have similar issues. And the way it works is most of the big states, many of the big states, there's some noteworthy exceptions, do not have personal income taxes. So, for example, I think it's the state of Washington that doesn't have a personal income tax. And when you don't have a personal income tax in the state, then the regulatory apparatus for charities tends not to be as built up as it is in states like California, New York, Illinois, all of which have personal income taxes. So, I think it's old-fashioned political cronyism.
Wow. One of the listeners has sent a note asking, could the Clinton Foundation, should donors insist on getting their money back, could the foundation declare bankruptcy and avoid having to pay that back?
Well, the first part of the question, actually, the private foundations, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, those types of the Alpha Wood Foundation, I would argue they have an absolute obligation under the law to demand their money back. And the way they would get it back, as a guess, I don't know how bankruptcy works with foundations, but I do know that given the record that I see, the evidence that I see, and this is without benefit of subpoena power and, you know, government criminal power, prosecution, you know, to get on the inside here, I see a train of reckless behavior, gross negligence going back so long, so corrupt, so wrong, that as a guess, the directors or trustees of the various Clinton entities wouldn't have the benefit of insurance, and, you know, if some does exist, and that there would be grounds for massive civil suits here to recover money from the rich trustees and from the accounting firm and maybe other professional services firms that have not done the work they should have done to keep this group on the straight and narrow. So, yeah, I mean, if I had been giving money, to something like this, first I would say shame on me for not checking and seeing this a long time ago. I mean, it's not like we you and I haven't been talking about this for a little while, but shame on anybody who hasn't really, you know, evaluated this for him or herself. And yes, absolutely, this is a time to ask for your money back.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. We've come to the end of the program. Charles, this is an eye-opener, another eye-opener. And I'm hoping, because I see indications that people are listening, the right people who are listening and will hopefully dig deeper here because they have the power to do so and to prosecute if there's reason to prosecute. So thank you so much for staying up all night and going through thousands of pages. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Trace.
Thank you. Now, stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program, and are you learning anything about this incredible behemoth called the Clinton Foundation? A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.